A new report from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services finds a strong connection between the COVID-19 pandemic and a larger-than-expected increase in opioid overdose incidents. Suspected opioid overdose incidents increased early on in the pandemic, from March to about August of last year, according to data, before decreasing again, and it looks like the numbers could be on the rise again this year, but that information is still coming in. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or someone in your life been dealing with substance abuse issues throughout the pandemic? What's that experience been like? Have there been additional challenges? What do you think others can do to help those dealing with addiction? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Sheila Wykes is Director of Substance Abuse Services for Family Health Center at Marshfield Clinic Health System. Sheila, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Rob. Thank you for having me.
Well, the pandemic disrupted our lives in a number of ways. What were some of the key ways, as you see it, that it added extra challenges to treating substance abuse in Wisconsin?
Well, where our services are is we serve rural Wisconsin, particularly central and north areas. And there were multiple impacts. Certainly, when we needed to go into the shutdown, the lockdown due to the pandemic, there were multiple people who were not able to work. There were, of course, children not able to go to school, so they were attempting to homeschool. There was just all of the anxiety about what was going to happen next. It was a very, very frightening time. At the same time that things were shutting down, so contacts and services that people might have been using prior to that, like coming to counseling, going to recovery groups, much of that shut down as well. So people were left very isolated in a very stressful time without access to some of the supports they would have ordinarily used. As a result, there was a real increase in use for people who perhaps had issues already. But then we also saw people who maybe had just used socially, whether it's alcohol or other substances, that they turned to using more as part of their coping, whether it was because they weren't going to work, so you could have alcohol every day or use opioids, whatever it was. But we just saw all kinds of things that ordinarily were protective factors just fall away under the pandemic. So it was a very, very difficult time for people.
You mentioned the unique challenges in rural Wisconsin, and I've talked to people over the years about big gaps in available in-person services. How do you work to try to bridge that in normal times or during a pandemic?
Well, in normal times, you have the transportation issues always. We have three clinics in the service area that I talked about, and between clinics, it's a solid two-hour trip. So many of the people that we serve may drive an hour, 45 minutes or an hour one way to get to an appointment. So in a regular year, that's a challenge. When you add the pandemic and we can't see people in person, well, of course, the answer in many areas was to go to telehealth. The challenge in rural Wisconsin is there's not enough internet broadband access for people to do telehealth. The best we could do for many of the people we served were telephone calls. And it was better than not having any contact. But I can tell you, while it's still a contact, it's not the same as being able to see a person's face, be able to read what's going on with them, or even better, to be in person. So that's a major challenge when you can't do anything but a telephone call. And some of our people, I'll be very honest, they have trouble getting enough reception to not have calls drop. So rural Wisconsin has some major challenges in trying to deliver services that are not in person.
As you mentioned, this story is about a number of different substances that people are abusing, from alcohol to illegal drugs. I mentioned those statistics about overdoses in particular with various kinds of opioids. What are you seeing with that issue in particular in your practice and around the state?
We certainly have seen overdoses increase. Again, because we're in rural areas, you aren't necessarily seeing the larger numbers that you see in urban areas, but the number of them occurring, it's increased. The other piece that happens is we've seen so many people using more than one substance. So if you're using opioids, but then you add alcohol to it, you've got an additive effect for a person shutting down and stopping breathing. And we've seen so many people adding alcohol or other substances to what they already use. So there was just a major additive effect. We have we routinely distribute Narcan to the people that we serve. We do know that that has had some impact, but yeah, overdose is definitely up. And then for whatever reason, there seemed to be no interruption in the delivery of drugs. Fentanyl is very much present. Heroin is present. We're seeing cocaine. So while all kinds of other things were interrupted, drug delivery was not. That continued.
We're talking to Sheila Weix, substance abuse expert for Marshfield Clinic Health System, talking about substance abuse during the pandemic, the challenges in getting treatment, the stress that might be adding to the problem for a lot of people. You can join in with your questions, maybe your experiences, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Shea is with us in Madison. Shea, hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I wanted to share an experience. I have a child who struggles with substance abuse and mental health. And unfortunately, we've had to go to the ER since COVID started. One of the reasons to go to the ER is to have a mental health evaluation to be admitted to inpatient, which is really the only way to get into inpatient. And we just had an experience where we went to the ER, was pushed out in an hour because the ER was totally filled with other needs. I'm guessing a lot of them were COVID. But basically, the mental health needs were not being able to be addressed because of the way the system is set up. And the system is focusing right now on a lot of COVID needs, so that then the mental health piece was missed completely. Another piece to that, I think, played into it too, is that, you know, everyone's really busy. And unfortunately, there was law enforcement involved, and law enforcement seems to precede any mental health evaluation. So a mental health evaluation was missed, or the social worker didn't do it because the decision was there's going to be, criminal justice involved. So it's like a system breakdown, and it's struggling more, I think, because of COVID and those needs around ER, and having ER is the only way to get admitted to inpatient.
Wow. Shea, thank you so much for sharing your experience. Good luck to you and your daughter, your family as a whole. Shea brought up a lot of interesting points. First of all, I hadn't even thought of that. Emergency rooms around the country now, again, getting crowded with COVID patients. That might be making it harder for someone in Shea's daughter's situation to access needed emergency services related to substance abuse and mental health.
Absolutely. The systems are very stretched. And as COVID increases, as we've been seeing, and certainly as you watch the news, it applies to any number of other non-COVID situations. Mental health, absolutely, but also heart attacks and strokes and any number of other things. The system is very, very stressed at this point. And of course, the numbers are going up for infections with the variant. So whatever one can do, and you can't always do something, but whatever one can do to have a plan or contact that will allow any other route can be helpful. And I have no idea if that's even a possibility for you. But that would be a consideration, because you are right. You are likely to have the same experience for the next while if that is your only route in.
And Sheila, it occurs to me, if the first mental health evaluation, if the first step to getting treatment is having to go to an emergency room, I don't know, that doesn't seem like a very good system. Do we need more access to early interventions before you have this crisis that leads to the emergency room?
Well, my practice is in substance use disorder. I have some background in mental health. I don't present as expert in that. But what I can tell you is that each county has some level of services. So I would certainly check to see what is available through your county. And again, perhaps you've been down that path. I don't have enough awareness to know. But that is certainly another route to at least crisis plans and a method to get the needs met that may not involve the emergency room. Just a thought that may help.
And then Shea also mentioned law enforcement. And here I want to focus specifically on the substance abuse angle. Obviously, there's a law enforcement role. What do you see as the best way of cooperating between law enforcement when it comes to substance abuse issues and treatment?
It really depends on when the interaction is happening. Certainly, if someone is in the midst of a crime involving alcohol or drugs, that's a whole different spot than when law enforcement has awareness of someone who clearly has a substance use disorder and they're trying to find assistance for them. We have several law enforcement entities that do work to help people get into treatment to prevent further arrests. Some of it is truly just on a shoestring with volunteers. They've connected with some local faith organizations. And if a person in the community says, I want help, there are law enforcement folks that says, we are here to help you. And they will connect them with things. They'll give them a ride. I mean, there's various things. Remember, this is rural Wisconsin. So the communities have long needed to depend on one another, people within the community. So several of those have come together. We have another law enforcement person who has a recovery coach he works with very closely. And they have people turning over their drugs, seeking to get into recovery, looking to connect with things. So there's multiple ways that if it's not in the middle of a commission of a crime, that law enforcement can be exceedingly helpful. And it's not a matter of it becoming more criminal charges, because we also recognize that that can be a very fast path to things just getting worse and worse. If there's continued charges, continued being jailed, not being able to afford fines, et cetera. So the role can be very, very different depending on the approach that a particular agency or a particular officer is opting to use.
We're talking to Sheila Weix, Director of Substance Abuse Services for the Family Health Center at Marshfield Clinic Health System. We are talking about substance abuse during the pandemic, unique challenges in getting people to treatment, and added stress maybe leading to more substance abuse problems. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has this been part of your life over the last year? If you're willing, could you share your experience yourself with a family member or someone who provides treatment yourself? Or if you're in law enforcement, what are you seeing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Sheila Weix, Director of Substance Abuse Services for the Family Health Center at Marshfield Clinic Health System. We're talking about addiction and substance abuse during the pandemic. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your experiences. What, have you had trouble finding treatment for yourself or a loved one? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Peter's with us from the Village of Summers. Peter, hello.
Hi there. Personal level, I just want to say that in the past 16 months, I have lost 7 friends to opioid overdoses. And the murky question that I'm hoping that that can be answered here is, when a person overdoses, how is it determined if the underlying cause of their overdose was maybe a suicide attempt? And do the numbers really correlate? And how is that determined? Because just on a personal level, and I realize this is anecdotal, but those of us who have been left behind were wondering, yes, so-and-so was suffering depression, and was this a suicide? And I'm just wondering how that determination is made when looking at these numbers.
Peter, I'm sorry for all of that loss in your life. Thank you for sharing that with us. Sheila, this is something determined by coroners and medical examiners, but can you talk about that overlap, as he's talking about, between depression, isolation, substance abuse, and the potential for overdose?
Absolutely. And Peter, I'm so sorry for your loss. That is so difficult. And to have multiple losses that way is a tremendous challenge. What I can tell you is that there are some studies where they've looked at exactly that question. And in some studies, they've said as high as at least 25% of what has been labeled overdose is actually a suicide. Depression is so rampant. Plus, I want you to think about when someone is in the middle of their substance use disorder and really just using and all of the losses, because let's face it, this is a disease that takes everything eventually, that when that's going on, it is really possible to become hopeless. And hopelessness is what is behind a lot of suicides. If you cannot see that there is any future or there's any way out, suicide becomes a viable option for some people at that point. So one of the things that I heard you say in that, and you are absolutely correct, oftentimes substance use disorders are not occurring by themselves. There are what we call co-occurring disorders. Depression is a major one. Anxiety disorders are very, very frequent. When you have those and they're not treated, sometimes part of what people are using is to deal with that, to try with symptoms. PTSD is often present because so many of the people who have substance use disorders also have a positive history of trauma from various aspects of their life. So all of that comes together. So when you think about that, there's a couple of thoughts that come to mind. One is that isolation is a key piece of this, and the pandemic has been really terrible for that. People have been much more isolated. So things like, even though it's a text or an email, that reaching out or call, that reaching out to connect, that's a really important part. Will it absolutely guarantee that someone won't overdose? Of course not. But it may. It may give somebody that contact that day that makes a difference. I think other things, and there is information available online and things around recognizing potential signs of depression or suicide in a friend or a colleague or a family member that would alert you to want to do something more. I apologize, I don't have those resources, but if you would just do a search for that, I think you can find some resources. But I believe that your question is right on target. Mm-hmm. And as Rob said, it's determined by coroners, but there are so many circumstances. And I have to say, when you have somebody, for instance, who's been using opioids for a long time, and where you find them is they've taken everything they've got, that chances are that was a suicide. Because if they've been using for a while and they don't suddenly have fentanyl or something else in their supply so they're used to what they take, people know what they usually take. So if you suddenly take everything, yeah, you're probably looking at an overdose.
Peter.
Does that, or an intended suicide.
Peter, so thanks a lot for the call. Sense? Definitely. And one resource, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. And Sheila, I understand a big focus, or one of the focuses of the treatment you offer, is harm reduction. And I think people might think of you're either using substances or you're not. Can you talk about that principle, that idea of harm reduction?
Yes, yes. So sometimes what happens is someone will present to us, because we do medication-assisted treatment, so we provide Suboxone or Vivitrol. And a person will present to us, and we will get them going on the Suboxone, which really goes a long way to help stabilize them with their opioids. But they may also be using methamphetamine and some alcohol, and maybe if you're on some cocaine and some marijuana. We will work on that. It isn't a matter of, oh, now you're on the medication, everything in your urine has to disappear. We know it doesn't work like that. So we continue to work on those things, and we expect them to go away over time and that the person's working hard on recovery. But a lot of it's harm reduction. It's one of the reasons that every person that sees us gets a prescription for Narcan. And we talk to them about, please be sure your family, your friends know about this. We have had situations where that dose of Narcan from us was administered to somebody and it saved a life. You know, that's harm reduction, because you can't possibly help somebody to recover if they're no longer breathing. So yeah, harm reduction, you do things like that. Needle exchanges make sense. Anything that can help the person keep going until they're ready to do something more for recovery. That's what the harm reduction is about.
And just in our last few moments, Sheila, a bright side here is it seems like there are a lot of proven treatments. There's a lot in our toolkit, right?
Absolutely. Medication-assisted treatment with opioids has made a huge difference. And for anyone who's started on it, within 2 weeks of starting, the person is able to think better. Their life becomes less chaotic, and then they can begin to work on recovery. So that's a very positive thing. There are a number of approaches to the actual treatment that can make a difference. There are Vivitrol injections which can support a number of people. That's naltrexone. So yeah, there are a number of things that can help, absolutely. And again, as long as a person draws breath, they're capable of recovery. There's no such thing as the person's had X number of treatments, so they can't have treatment anymore. Absolutely not. And people change over time. People can recover, and it makes a difference for everyone.
Sheila, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Sheila Wykes, Director of Substance Abuse Services for the Family Health Center at Marshfield Clinic Health System. She joined us today to talk about an increase in overdose and substance abuse incidents in Wisconsin during the pandemic and the kinds of treatment that are available out there. We've got a link to a recovery and mental health service finder in the state. You can find that right now at WPR.org/Central Time. Again, find resources at WPR.org/Central Time.